You are listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time on SQPN.com, the StarQuest production network, leading the way. This episode is brought to you by Bluehost. Create your own website or blog with a .com domain name for just $6.95 per month. Go to SQPN.com and click on the Bluehost banner for more information. And by the Amazon Store. Shop at Amazon by clicking on our Amazon link at onceuponatime.sqpn.com, and your purchase will help support our show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, our podcast series entirely dedicated to speculation, wild theories about what's happening in this wonderful world of fairy tales far, far away, and then what happens in the real world, our world, in the town of Storybrooke. And today, we're finally catching up with the series by talking about the episode, That Still Small Voice. And I am excited. Today, we have a full crew of co-hosts to talk about this great episode. First of all, ladies first, of course, I want to introduce a new co-host to you, and it's actually Lisa's sister, Shelley, because Lisa, unfortunately, and you heard this in previous episodes, she is still sick. She's not well enough to join us today, but she told us, hey, I've got a sister, and she is crazy about this show as well, and she even took notes. So, Shelley, introduce yourself to the audience.
Hi, Father Roderick. Well, my name is Shelley Kelly, and it's my husband's fault, not my parents, that my name rhymes like that. With my sister, I contribute to Of Sound Mind and Spirit. That's our blog. Yep. And we've attended the last three CNMCs, so we've met you, know you well, and we're really pleased to be doing this.
Yes. For our listeners, by the way, the CNMC stands for the Catholic New Media Conference, which is a big new media conference that we organize in the United States this is the fourth one that we just did. And
yes.
So it's just great because you get to meet people that you only know via podcasts and via email and Facebook and stuff. And so we were able to hang out. At the time, you were still expecting, right? That was just before you became a mom again.
Yes, I had my third child, a little boy, Douglas Arthur, on October 14th. He was a week and a half late. So he is now 7 weeks old, and hopefully you will not hear him while we're recording this.
That's totally fine. I mean, there are kids in Once Upon a Time as well, so this is a very family-oriented show, and it's still doing extremely well in that demographic. Parents are watching it with their kids, and it has something both for kids, I think, and for adults.
And my daughters are 12 and 9, and they both really like the show.
Fantastic. Also joining us today is Deborah Shaben again, and I'm looking forward to her Disney input on this episode. Hey, hi, Deborah.
Hi. I have a lot to say, actually, about the Disney, because I have some good news for you, but I'll let you know later in the podcast.
Oh, so. You're making me curious. And joining us, as usual, is also David Antlows. Hey, David.
Hey, Father.
Glad you could join us for today's recording, even though you'll probably have to bow out kind of halfway through the show because you've got other duties. But thanks for joining us, at least for part of our episode today. So why don't we just start with a short overview of what happened in this episode, in this particular show called That Still Small Voice.
These stories, the classics. The reason we all know them. They're a way for us to deal with our world. A world that doesn't always make sense. Believing in even the possibility of a happy ending is a very powerful thing.
I still think that's one of the best quotes of the pilot episode. And it's almost a philosophy about why fairy tales and stories are so important for us. Because they help us make sense of the world in which we live. Stories are like mirrors and they inspire us, but they also provide us with guidance. So what about this story? It's all about conscience. Who wants to take a stab at recapping this briefly?
Anybody?
I hear crickets, which is very
appropriate.
Very appropriate. Well, Deborah, last time you were like, oh, we got to do this in a more concise way. So I take that as an invitation that you want to do the recap today.
Okay. And the thing is that I haven't watched this since last Monday. So I'm kind of like, oh.
Me neither. But, we'll help you.
But maybe that'll make it shorter. Okay.
Okay. Give it a try.
So we are introduced to, I guess, Jiminy Cricket. What's his fairy tale name is something different.
Jiminy Cricket.
Jiminy Cricket and his Cricket?
But, oh, okay,
his
maybe
name in Storybrooke is Hopper, Mr. Hopper.
Yes. Is it Artie?
They never say his last name Archie. In the fairy tale world. Archie. They only call him Jiminy.
Yes.
True.
Archie Hopper is, you know, he's the child psychologist that Henry is seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're introduced to his at the very beginning, we see him as a child stealing from people at a puppet show. He's pickpocketing. And yes. Then he takes all of their money and their jewelry back to his parents who are kind of unscrupulous, kind of gypsy-like people.
Yes. They're vaguely reminiscent, I thought, of the Fox characters in the Pinocchio Disney movie.
Oh, yeah, I totally got that, too.
I was like, wow, interesting.
Yeah, and I, for a while, I thought they were puppeteers, too, because the story starts out as yes. a puppet show.
Yes.
I think they were.
Yeah.
They are
were
doing
the puppeteers.
They are doing the
voices. They distracted the crowd.
Yes.
And Jiminy went around and did the pickpocketing.
And so immediately I thought of Stromboli in Pinocchio. If you've ever watched Pinocchio. Anyway, but that's for later.
What's wait a second. I missed that. Was there a Stromboli reference?
Stromboli was the greedy puppeteer
yes.
in Pinocchio.
But what's the link with Once Upon a Time? Are they called puppets. Stromboli?
Yeah, no, it's just a puppeteer.
Oh, just a puppeteer. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I caught that. Yeah, it even looks, the mobile theater even looks a bit the same.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so you see him as a child, and then you see him grown up. And he gets a cricket as a child, and he loves crickets, and his parents are not so thrilled, if I can remember correctly.
Yeah, and I think he's fascinated by the crickets because they're free, mm-hmm. and whereas he feels very much imprisoned. Basically, he's working for his parents. He's forced to do all the pickpocketing, but he doesn't want to, and his conscience is actually telling him not to. But he is not free. He's like that cricket in the small cage.
And yeah. How ironic, he says the crickets are free, and yet he has one in a cage.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, he probably can empathize with that cricket because that's how he feels.
Well, and you see him being, I think when you see him grown up in the fairy tale land, you can see him wistfully kind of wanting to be free and wishing to be free.
Yes.
So, you know, that's one thing. And I forgive me if I'm not getting this all in order, but I just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you do. You see him in that land wanting to be something free of his parents, basically.
Well, yeah.
He wants to be free of Regina in the real world.
Mm-hmm. True, true. And you get this gruesome scene with the couple, the young couple that they visit. Basically trying to sell them, what was it, like
elf tonic
to protect them from some kind of plague. And in the meantime, Jiminy has gotten this, was it a fairy that gave him?
It was the blue fairy.
The blue fairy gave him this potion that would.
That was
Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, that was Rumpelstiltskin. Okay.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I shouldn't do the recap because I forget about all those details.
Yeah, I forgot it was Rumpelstiltskin too. And it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't got to that. Should we wait and talk about Rumpelstiltskin and what he's doing?
Let's wait.
Let's do the recap real briefly. But anyway, there's a switch of the potions. And by the way, all our listeners have seen the episode, so they know exactly what happened. But they switch No, his parents switch the potions, and so the couple gets turned into the two puppets that we've seen in Rumpelstiltskin's pawn shop, or Mr. Gold's pawn shop, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah.
So my daughter totally caught that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there was a whole theory also on the web about, oh, this is a reference to Lost, to Adam and Eve from Lost, and now we know it still could be a reference, but it has a totally different meaning here.
Yeah.
Wow.
So flash forward to Storybrooke, and we see Henry in a therapy session with Archie.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he's still trying, you know, they're still trying to figure out how are we going to get Henry away from these delusions.
Yes. And I think Regina wants that, right? Forces Jiminy Cricket, basically.
During this episode, she says, you know, you tell him to stop it or else, you know, you're done.
And he does that, right? Which is a very a painful scene where he's like, oh, you're just delusional and it's all in your mind. And he betrays that trust, the bond of trust that he had with Henry. Mm-hmm. And of course, immediately regrets it. And his conscience, again, this episode is all about the role of the conscience. It tells him that he made a fatal mistake there. And he tries to make it right by going after Henry when Henry goes into that big gaping hole. It's basically an old mine, right?
It's almost like the Seven Dwarfs mine, but yes. We'll get there. Because that's what I was going to talk about next.
Okay.
Then we see Emma's going to her job as deputy. And she's telling Sheriff Graham, hey, I'm not wearing a uniform. There's no way you're going to make me wear a uniform. But Graham's like, well, why don't you just wear the star then? Wear the badge,
yes.
Which is a star. Yeah. And so as soon as she puts the star on, we hear this sudden boom that shakes the walls and shakes the windows. And the phone starts ringing off the hook in the police station. And, you know, and she looks surprised, like, whoa, what happened here? Because it was just pretty simultaneous.
Yes.
So the next scene is you see the loud boom, and it's a sinkhole where the mines are, to an entrance to an old mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so Graham arrives on scene to take charge, and Regina's already there. And basically that's when Graham said, oh, by the way, I hired her.
It's in my budget.
Yeah, it's pretty much in my budget. So
it's open defiance of Regina here, which I thought was great.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought that reinforced the whole idea that maybe Graham is the huntsman.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
The huntsman didn't kill Snow White despite the queen's orders. Graham hires Emma despite we now know he's involved with the mayor. He openly does something that he thinks is right, but she doesn't like.
Yep. Totally true.
Yeah. So here comes the mayor, and she trots in there and tells everybody, hey, don't worry about this. These old mines, we're going to bulldoze those down and pave it over, and it'll be okay, and I'm here to save the day.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry's like, well, what if there's something down there?
Yes.
And then as Henry is walking away, he notices his mom bend over and pick up what looks like a piece of glass. And that's where I paused and started screaming at Hulu, going, what is that? And then Henry actually says, what is that?
I think most of our listeners probably did the same. They're like, what is that?
And she puts it in her pocket.
I have a theory about what that is, and I think many of us have. But I'm eager to hear what you think that it is. But let's go on.
We'll get to that later. Yeah, because I do have a theory about that. And I think it's we have two different theories about what that is.
Yes.
So that's when Archie and Regina have this little meeting saying, hey, you need to stop this whole nonsense about fairy tales with him.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think. Yeah, so he's like, take the delusion out of my son's head and crush it.
Yes. And that's what he does. He has that conversation with Henry, and Henry is so upset, he walks away and decides to enter the mine. Again, out of defiance almost. It's like, I'll show them that there's more to this mine. And of course, it's super dangerous, and this kid is alone, and the whole mine is very unstable. So I think... Mr. Hopper, knowing that Henry is gone, he immediately knows where he's going, and so he's going after Henry into the mine, trying to find him. And it's pretty dramatic what happens there, and it's like this big breach of trust, and he tries to mend it, but it's not as easy as it seems. It's not that the kid is like, okay, sure, yeah, I'll forgive you. No, it's pretty serious what happens there.
Well, and Henry enters the mine because he feels like he has to prove it.
Yes.
He has something he has to prove.
That it's not delusional.
Especially in light of Dr. Hopper not believing him.
Yeah. So it's actually, in a way, it's Hopper forcing him to do this. And had he not broken that trust, then Henry would have never had the impetus to go into the mine. So he feels rightfully, I think, guilty for what happened, and tries to save the boy almost at by losing his life, because it gets really dangerous there, and we've got some cave-ins and everything.
Yeah, so they get trapped in there, and they try to blast a hole through there, and it doesn't work, and. You know, and finally, they find an old abandoned mine shaft in
there.
A
great hatch scene where they discover there's this hatch in the ground, and I was like, this is a Lost reference. Now this is something I'm sure of.
But did you notice who found the hatch?
No,
it was the Dalmatian. It was Pongo or whatever they call the Dalmatian.
Yeah, no, we hear actually his voice. Yeah, it's Pongo. Which was hilarious. It's another indication that this is not a coincidence that he's a Dalmatian. And it gives me hope that we'll see Cruella de Vil. Who knows?
Well, and I don't know what the dog's name is. I don't think it's Pongo. But
Pongo.
It is Pongo.
They say Pongo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
If the Dalmatians don't show up, like, Cruella de Vil doesn't show up literally, this is, like, the most massive in-joke ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I think, you know, with the success of this series, we're certainly going to see a second season. So we're talking 44 episodes. There's plenty of room for the Dalmatians.
And we're kind of flipping back and forth between the scenes in the mine with Archie and Henry, and what's happening in Fairy Tale Land with Jiminy, and how he gets free, and again that goes back to his parents had, you know, he got this potion from Rumpelstiltskin, and he's in there like, you know, don't worry about what it does, just give it to your parents, and I'll come by and collect them later.
Yeah,
and then so the parents are sneaky, and they kind of do a sleight of hand and switch out the potion with some water. They're trying to sell this like. Whatever plague potion to this poor couple.
Yeah.
And it turns them into puppets. And so he feels like he's, you know, he's really in a bad place. And that's when the Blue Fairy arrives.
Yeah, he's very guilt ridden, because it seems like everything he does only makes the situation worse. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it's interesting that he's a psychiatrist. Or a psychologist, it's probably because of his own soul searching that he studied psychology and then wanted to help other people. It's because he knows what it is to be in such, you know, in such a dire situation.
Exactly.
Well, and I got the impression he might have been able to live with the swap, and that the couple was affected if it hadn't been for the boy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, the boy had come up to him in the beginning.
Yes. And brought him the umbrella. He said, "Oh, puppets, I can't wait to see the show," and gave him the umbrella. Here,
was that the same boy?
I'm taking care of you.
Oh, and I missed that. Cool.
Yes. And then when the puppets happened, when the couple was turned into puppets, the little boy came running in, "Mama, Papa."
Oh,
my gosh.
Yes.
And boom, Jiminy's just hit with it. And all the weight of it, I think it was the straw that broke the back, all the weight of it came to him. And then when you see him wishing on that star, And all I could think of was the song, "When You Wish Upon."
Exactly.
But there he's wishing on the store, and the Blue Fairy comes down, and you don't need to wish so loudly. But how many times? And that little boy is Geppetto. And you will live as long as you need to protect him, or to be his guide, to be his conscience. But did you notice who in the real world was offering all the solutions, was saving Archie?
Geppetto.
He's the one that came up with, "Well, let's blast it. Well, let's rig this crane. Let's, you know, pull them up." And at the very end, and I hope I'm not jumping the gun here, when the elevator shaft, when the elevator falls, and Archie's willing to sacrifice himself, just get Henry up, just, you know, make sure he's fine. How was he saved? The umbrella.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I noticed that. That's very, very cool.
So once again, Geppetto, Marco stepped in. And saved Archie.
How awesome! And I love the twist that they gave to the fairy tale story, explaining us basically the why Jiminy Cricket becomes Pinocchio's conscience and why he takes care of Pinocchio. It's because he had this long time friend bond with Geppetto, and was probably Geppetto's conscience for a long time. And then, you know, Geppetto basically sends him to be Pinocchio's conscience, and it just put the whole story that we know and love in a different context and gives it much more backstory. And I thought it was fantastic what they did there, the writers. Totally respectful, I think, of the Pinocchio story, and yet giving so much more, making it so more real. You can totally empathize with what happens to Jiminy.
Yeah, there were so many undercurrents going on with this episode that it was almost overwhelming.
It was.
I mean, you had the morality of it. You had the theme of the show. To me, was being lost, and there's your lost reference again.
Yep.
When he tells Henry, "I was lost and you found me at the end."
Oh, sure, yes.
The magic being shown once again as evil.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The freedom, everyone's trapped by the curse. They're looking to break free. They're being controlled. They're being manipulated just like puppets.
Yes. Oh, yes. That was a very strong undercurrent.
I watched it again yesterday. I couldn't keep up almost. I kept pausing it and yelling at my kids, "Did you catch that?"
We'll go over the details that I think a lot of us have missed. Just remind me, how did the episode end? Was there a cliffhanger or something that pointed
forward?
Well,
there's a couple things that happened. And we didn't even talk about Mary Margaret this episode yet.
Okay.
But there was a little stuff happening with her. But the cliffhanger
was almost an aside.
Yeah, and it wasn't all that exciting what was going on, except at the end when she resigned from her teaching job.
Oh, yeah.
Well, she didn't resign. I didn't think she resigned from the teaching.
No, it was
she resigned from the hospital thing.
Oh, from the hospital.
Yes.
Okay, I couldn't
remember.
She was
a volunteer there.
Yeah.
But there's this whole, like, John Doe, what's his name? James's wife is still there, or alleged wife, because I still
think. He's David in the
real world. David. Okay, yes. And he's still, he doesn't remember exactly everything, so he just basically says, "Yeah, I remember," and he doesn't remember at all. And Mary Margaret is still torn because she's like, "Oh, this girl is so sweet and so good and so perfect for him." And yet there is something in her that tells her, you know, he should be with me. Or at least we feel that attraction between the two. And so does he, by the way, which makes me believe that we'll discover later on that this whole thing is actually a setup. It's a lie. I don't believe that the two are actually married. I think it's a scam.
I do too. I think it's.
I hope
it's
so.
Regina's
it had
scam.
Better be. Yeah. Otherwise, I'll stop watching. No, not really.
I almost got the impression that the whole show really revolves around them, and these are just side stories with the backstory that are entertaining us. Because there really was no good reason to keep interjecting the Snow White Prince Charming story, the David Mary Margaret story, into this episode. He told her he feels like he awoke in a strange land. Mm-hmm. He says none of this feels real.
Yes.
The only thing that feels real, it feels right, is her.
Yeah.
And yet, here's Catherine, and she's still wearing that little pea charm on the necklace,
mm-hmm,
I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And you caught the name of the dog?
Yes, it's Pooh. Yeah.
Oh, the other dog.
No,
their
no,
dog.
David, when Catherine brings the photo of the dog, and she says, "Do you remember our dog?"
So what's the name of the dog?
It's Ajax.
Ajax.
And he says to Mary Margaret, "Who names a dog Ajax?"
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Because that's mythology. That's not a fairy tale name.
Oh, yeah.
That's from the Iliad.
Yes. How cool.
Oh, mm-hmm, not that I'm going to change.
No, go ahead.
We'll go back to the last scene, which is the item of contention we're going to talk about a little bit later, is you see Regina walk over to the mine shaft. Or the empty hole, and take the glass out of her pocket and throw it down the air shaft. And as we follow the glass down, it bounces and pings right off of Snow White's coffin.
Exactly.
And this is actually on ABC.com that says it is Snow White's coffin.
Okay. And then
pings off of the coffin. Whether it's a piece of the coffin, I don't know.
Okay. Interesting.
Well, yeah, because Henry picked up the same thing when he was in the mine. He picked up a piece of glass that had, it looked like a piece of iron bar across of it.
And
the minute he touched
it, too, right?
I don't know. I didn't catch that.
Sorry,
but the minute he touched it, that's when the cave-in began to happen.
True. That's true. Well, ample material to talk about in our more, let's say, detailed approach. And we're just going to go over all the stuff that, some of you have to even taken notes. So we're going to try to find the Easter eggs and all the details that make us think and can give us clues about what's going to happen in Fairy Tale World.
Grass.
Every story needs a memorable detail.
And every episode of Once Upon a Time has many memorable details. And so, David, since you probably will have to leave us a little bit early, let me start with you. What were the moments in this episode that that you remember most, or the scenes that you liked, or the details that you've noticed?
Well, the first thing is at the beginning of the episode where she puts on the badge, and immediately, like we said, that immediately, the mine opens, mm-hmm. everything shakes. So if it's one of those symbolic moments saying, okay, the more she tries, the more she integrates herself with this town, the more things start to happen. So she's not only living there now, once she's mm-hmm. part, she's now officially part of the community. Everything, now there's crickets in the, insects are coming back, the ground's opening up, everything is really starting to move faster.
Well, and I think that even symbolically, it's like the ground is shaking. It's like the world is shaking because she is actually moving things. She's making it change by her decisions and by her, and here it was a decision basically to get involved, to play, mm-hmm. to take on the role. Yeah, it's not only that she's staying there, but she's also going to play a role, and that's another step. It's even going beyond just staying in Storybrooke.
And by putting on that badge, she's like that makes her a part of the story, where she hasn't been part of the story yet.
Yeah,
kind of in a way.
But earthquakes are often a symbol of change, literally, or a shift in the story. The chat room reminds us of the earthquake when Jesus dies on the cross, basically giving his life, and that's when the earth shakes. And in this situation, it's Emma who decides to give her life, to dedicate her life to the people that she loves and wants to protect, even if it's just the boy Henry. And it literally shakes. It shakes the town.
In the previous episode, didn't Regina tell her that for something to grow, it has to have roots?
Yes.
And
yes.
She didn't have any roots. She mm-hmm. was, seven times the number of her address that she's changed.
Yeah, seven
but
dresses.
In this episode, when she puts down roots, that's when things happen. And we have an older home with really, really advanced trees. And those roots spread and they disrupt things underground, the water pipes, the foundation. So the minute she decides to put down roots, boom, up comes the sinkhole with access to the mines. That's what I was thinking.
I didn't even think of that, but that's a very astute detail indeed, that the roots, they change the ground. they uproot everything. Well, and that's certainly what she's been doing.
A lot of bumpy sidewalks here.
Oh, will we see Bambi? That would be cool. Okay, just sorry. Go ahead, Dad.
Come on, Father.
David, what else? What else did you see?
Well, yeah, there's the whole. This might not be as big of a detail, but mm-hmm. I found it interesting that with the Jiminy mm-hmm. backstory. I always wonder why Geppetto, even in the fairy tale, was so fixated on puppets. It's because his own parents were turned into puppets. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a, wow. That's kind of a, and then Jiminy's kind of with him as penance this whole time.
Mm-hmm. I noted actually, it's one of the few things I wrote down while watching the episode is like, this totally, like you said, it explains Geppetto's fascination with puppets, but also why he is hoping for this wooden puppet to turn into a boy. It totally makes sense because that has been his lifelong hope, dream/regret for his parents, that they are puppets and he wanted them to become real again. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was an amazing way to give depth to Geppetto's character. It's not just a crazy
circle.
Old man who is alone, and that's why he wants this puppet to turn into a boy. No, it's this orphan, and his parents were puppets, and he wanted them to be real, and that never happened, and so his wish actually becomes a reality by the creation or by the humanization of Pinocchio. It's just, I'm in awe of the writers, what they did here. Sorry. Let's go back to David.
That's fine. That's right around where I was going. And back to quote unquote the real world. We have yet another story where yet another character has the strength to stand up to Regina. Mm-hmm. So this time both Graham and Archie have decided to kind of side against her by hiring Emma and by standing up to her about Henry. So yep. more and more of the characters are now going against her.
Mm-hmm.
So the more this gets lopsided, the quicker maybe the curse will break, or I'm not sure how this is going to play, but just, you know, the clock's unfrozen. Now there are actually crickets again where there didn't used to be. So what's the next thing?
Yeah.
Every episode has something that changes. And I don't know, did y'all talk about the queen's magic in the fairy tale world and what her magic is in the real life world?
Well, we were wondering whether she actually has magical powers in the real world or not.
She's a politician.
I think it translates, her magic in the fairy tale world is translated into her ability to control and manipulate people in Storybrooke.
Oh.
Because she's allegedly the only one that knows that there were two worlds.
Yes.
She knows there were both.
And Mr. Gold, perhaps.
Mr. Gold really knows.
Yes.
Which I think he does. But that's a whole different episode.
But that's an interesting one, because, of course, magic, that's exactly the definition of magic. It's trying to manipulate reality. And to bend the rules, or sometimes we talked about this at length in our previous episode. It's like the whole theme in The Price of Gold of bending the rules and the consequences that it will bring, either the negative ones or, you know, you cannot use magic without, it's not for free. There's always a price to pay.
Right.
And
well, and the wand in the last episode, you know, he says, what is this? And she says, pure magic. And Rumpelstiltskin says, pure evil.
Yes.
So they've got that same theme that all magic is evil, or magic is evil. And Jiminy's parents, they do sleight of hand magic. They trick people.
True.
And they don't even do it because they need to do it. They do it because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do we have to run the elf tonic? Well, it's the principle of the matter.
We don't need
to do the magic. It's just fun to do it.
And remember this interesting line of Cinderella in the previous episode where she's like, well, do we really have to use magic? Isn't there another way to do this? And so you can tell that, and she's talked into, no, we have to do it this way. It's about the whole, you know, magic quill and everything. And it turns haywire. It actually becomes, it propels her husband into the well. And so, again, it's another proof that what Rumpelstiltskin says in the first time we meet him, it's like the magic is dangerous. And it's, I just saved you actually from the fairy. However,
well, the last episode was the first one that they had a happy ending.
Yes.
That something changed and resulted in a happy ending. Ashley got to keep the baby and she was reunited with the prince.
That is true. That is true. And here, in a way, for Jiminy, there's also a happy ending, both in the fairy tale part of the story and in the real world. Because he survives, he saves Henry. And in the fairy tale world, he is turned into this cricket and finds his freedom and has this new mission in life.
In the episode, he cuts his own puppet strings. He's not tied to Regina anymore. He stands up.
True.
He exerts his free will.
Yes. And he has this great line where he's like, well, what if there is a lawsuit about, you know, who's going to take care of the boy?
Oh, custody battle.
Who do they go to? I love that. I was like, yeah, you go.
That reminded me of Emma standing there with the chainsaw. You have no idea what I'm capable of.
Exactly. Uh-huh. I love it when people just find their strength, you know, and grow their self-confidence. It's very empowering. But
so far, we haven't seen anybody change their circumstances without using magic.
Well, in the real world, we have. Because that's not really magic. It's like...
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. But in the fairy tale world, every time that they want to change their circumstances, there's magic involved.
It's propelled by magic. It's almost as if... And that's probably why things keep going wrong there. And perhaps the Storybrooke counterpart is like, well, we'll show you that it's possible to change your life without magic. and that that is more lasting change. I don't know. But the only thing that, go against this theory is that the change at the end where Jiminy is turned into a cricket, that's actually something that he wished. And then yet it's brought about by a fairy, and it's brought about by magic. But it's not a negative thing.
So why her magic doesn't come with a price, or why is her magic not evil?
Well, last time I had a theory about that the magic in itself is not good or evil. It's a tool, and it depends on the intentions of the person that uses it. And so my theory is that whenever magic is used by evil people or egotistical people like Mr. Gold, it's all about him and power. Then there is a price to pay, and there are consequences, and it's usually a price that is much bigger than the benefit you get from the magic, because it's not a true gift. It is the magic is used there with an ulterior thought, with an agenda, with a price to pay. Whereas when the good fairies use magic or good people use magic, it's magic is a gift. It's almost like a metaphor of love. Where it's a gift without consequences, without a price, without any strings literally attached. And what Mr. Gold tries to make Cinderella believe is that she would have had to pay a price to this fairy. So he deforms the concept of magic by saying, oh, well, you know, I just saved you from the consequences. Whereas the magic that he then uses, that's the kind of usage of magic that has strings attached and that will rob her of her loved ones. And so I think that magic, I wouldn't be surprised if magic turns out to be a metaphor of love, and it's either people act out of self-interest or it's free. It's like, you know, love is always free. Otherwise, it's not truly love. It's just something
that
looks like love. But then again, that's perhaps the theologian in me saying that. David, are there any other details that you want to mention before you head out?
Well, you mentioned the no strings attached. I mean, in the case of Jiminy, there was a string attached, but it was one that he was willing to accept. So and it's more like if there are consequences to this kind of magic, then at least they're upfront about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was turned into a cricket, but he was fine with that.
Yep.
So he was more than happy to be. He was more than happy for that. And I guess one other thing was this episode again just kind of reinforces that Henry is kind of the agent of change here, just as much as Emma. He's the one who brings people to either. In the case of Snow White, she's found the prince. She still has to get him to remember her. And now that he's helped Archie find his conscience again. So who's next?
Yes. Very cool.
With that, I do probably have to get going.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us today. We'll wrap up the show with our thoughts, and hopefully you'll listen to our meanderings and thoughts and crazy theories. And I'm curious to hear your take next week on another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Thanks for joining us today, David.
No problem.
Have a great day.
Talk to you later.
All right. Let's move on to our next segment.
I wish, but nothing changes. I wish I was better at wishing.
Well, the wish is definitely one of the themes of this episode, wishing upon a star, wishing that you wouldn't have made the wrong decisions that you made, but and then still having the opportunity to make things right and to fulfill your deepest dream of who you want to be or who you're called to be. Deborah, you've been yelling at your TV during this episode, so I'm sure that you have some things you noticed, similarities or dissimilarities with the original Disney stories or the Disney versions of the fairy tales, crazy theories. I would say go ahead.
Well, you know, and if you've, you know, you can listen to our Secrets of Disney to hear the original version of Pinocchio.
That's a very good promo, actually. Because
yes, I don't mean to plug her.
No, I'm going to post that episode this week. So if you go to disney.sqpn.com, this week you'll be able to download the episode about Pinocchio. And it's a great one. It's a great story. Sorry, go ahead.
But the, you know, the discrepancies are, you know, it's hard for me because it's the story of Pinocchio and the story, you know, it's kind of intertwined with a lot of other fairy tales. So it's hard for me to tell you the discrepancies right off the top. But, if we're going to go back to the original story of Pinocchio, the Italian version, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like the comic strip of Pinocchio, did you find it interesting that Archie, when he was Jiminy Cricket in the fairy tale world, was more like Pinocchio? He was stealing and doing bad things. And...
Oh, you're right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Influenced by his parents, who look like the fox and the, what was the, mm-hmm. the other one also fox?
It was a cat.
Oh, a cat.
Yes.
Well, but his mom even has the hair. Did you notice the hairdress? And she has like the hair is even like two ears.
You know, now that you mention that, you are right.
I think it was done on purpose.
And does the father do most of the talking? Because in the Disney version of Pinocchio, the cat does not say a word.
Okay, well.
No, they both spoke in this.
Yeah, I know, but I couldn't remember if one was more dominant than the other.
Well, the dad is definitely the magician, the one who keeps like using his hands and to make things disappear and lure people.
Yeah. Well, and I was wondering, at first I was a little confused because I'm like, I already know who Pinocchio is as far as where he appears in the story.
Yeah.
But I was like, is that Lampwick? Is Archie actually Lampwick?
Okay.
And if you're familiar with Pinocchio, Lampwick is the bad boy that Pinocchio hangs out with on Pleasure Island.
Oh, true. Yes.
Yeah. You know, but I am like, well, no, that can't be the truth. But, you know, the whole original Pinocchio story, you know, Jiminy is just a little tiny part of it.
Yes.
And that Pinocchio was carved by Geppetto out of a magical block of wood, which we've already seen before. You know, the magical block of wood was just turned into the wardrobe, which held Emma.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Magical wood.
Yes. But that's the original story, is that Geppetto himself created Pinocchio. So that's the discrepancy there.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as other things I've seen, and this is, you didn't ask me one of my little Easter eggs last segment, so I'll have to throw it in here.
Go ahead.
And this is just, and I can't take credit for this. I saw this somewhere and I can't remember where, but have you noticed that in Storybrooke, Mary Margaret's hair is this little tiny, like she has like a pixie cut, almost like a little, like all of her hair has been whacked off.
Yeah.
And when she's Snow White, she has this amazing head of hair.
Absolutely.
So in a way, it's kind of like her symbol of her power in Storybrooke is her hair, and her hair is not there. So, you know, somebody had mentioned that, isn't it interesting that in Storybrooke, Mary Margaret's hair is getting longer?
Mm.
Oh. So maybe her power is growing.
Interesting. Yeah, I think we talked about the symbolism of hair in, I don't know in which episode it was, but I was referring to that Samson story in the Old Testament.
Oh, I don't think I was in that episode.
Okay, well, I think
that was one you did with Lisa, Samson and Delilah.
Yeah, and he's just super strong, but it's linked to his hair and the length of his hair, and then someone cuts it off, and he has no strength whatsoever anymore. I always thought that was a fantastic superhero story in the Old Testament, one of my favorite stories when I had in my children's Bible. Mm-hmm. The big Hulk-like guy with long hair.
Yeah,
but that's interesting. I didn't notice that her hair was growing. Yeah, who knows? She is changing. She's getting more self-confidence, but she's evolving. I don't know in which direction yet, but there's definitely something going on there. And it's Henry who's the catalyst of this change. He's constantly encouraging her to just go to the bed, read to the guy, you know, and because he knows the bigger plan. He knows where ultimately things have to end up. Remember that there are these pages that were torn out of the storybook and they were burned by Emma. So only he and Emma, well, probably only Henry, because I don't know if Emma actually read the pages before she burned them. But yes. Henry knows where this is going. But he's very careful. He always tells him, you know, you're not ready yet. So he's got a good feel for the pacing the people and gradually introducing them into their future. And I think that is a very interesting story element where, you know, you don't want to have the entire plan for your life right from the get-go. You discover that over time, what your vocation and what your role really is. And you can't rush it.
But what I've noticed too is that sometimes it's better to gradually lead people to their own conclusions than to tell them outright, hey, this is who you are.
Yep.
Yeah. So maybe otherwise, letting Emma discover it on her own is Henry's plan for everyone. It's like, I'm not going to tell you who you are, but I'm going to try to let you discover who you are.
Yes. And the moments that he tries to force the issue by saying, well, this is what's supposed to happen, and it's like this, then the reaction is adverse. It's like rejection. It's like, oh, come on. That can't be true. And it's
I'm not sure that the ending – I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm not sure the ending exactly was in the pages. I think the part that was dangerous was that Emma is the baby.
There's one image that we see.
Snow White.
True.
And that she would be the one to break the curse. I don't think the queen knows that. I don't think Regina knows that. And those are the pages they ripped out.
Interesting. Yes, I think you're right. Yes. Because we see a glimpse of that picture in the book of her birth, basically.
And Henry says he doesn't know who all the people are yet. He doesn't know who Mr. Gold is. He does not like Mr. Gold.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know who he is.
And somebody in another forum also mentioned that the reason he might not know who Mr. Gold is because the original story of Rumpelstiltskin is that nobody knows Rumpelstiltskin's name. This is why Henry might not know Rumpelstiltskin's name, because it's not known technically.
Is that so? How interesting.
Yeah,
because
that's the whole premise.
And Rumpelstiltskin himself always wants to know the names of people, so he has power over them.
Mm-hmm. Even in this episode, when Jiminy brings the treasures that he's stolen and gives them to Rumpelstiltskin, Rumpelstiltskin says, and the names.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The names of the good people that you stole this from.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't understand that scene, actually. Why was he bringing that stuff to Rumpelstiltskin? Was that some dealing? Was that a contract with his parents? Or I just felt it was so
it wasn't really well defined why he was stealing for Rumpelstiltskin or delivering stolen goods and names to Rumpelstiltskin. But it set it up for him to be able to get the potion from that little strand of gold.
Yes.
But and he wasn't spinning the gold from straw. He was spinning it from what looked like cotton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought it was strange.
But I'm almost thinking, could there be some backstory there that we'll see later on that Jiminy's parents actually had to pay a price to Rumpelstiltskin so that he was behind the whole stealing thing? I don't know. Because there's always like, they're paying Rumpelstiltskin. It's probably because there was a price to pay. There was a contract. Because he's always like, so what's the backstory there? Perhaps there is a motivation for his parents to behave the way they behave.
There are a lot more episodes.
Absolutely. So who knows? We might see that.
And how many treasures that maybe Jiminy stole or other treasures from the fairy tale world are going to show up in Mr. Gold's shop?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait to see that.
I've seen one thing in a detail in this episode, and that was Aladdin's lamp. And it's sitting there on the left of the puppets. It's right there. And it's kind of, you don't really see it. It's in the shadow, but it's clearly visible. And the camera just stops. And it's like, aha.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Will Robin Williams have a guest appearance?
That would be funny if they could get him.
That would be awesome. I don't think so, though, because he has been in legal battle with Disney over that role for years and years. Anyway, that's not here nor here or there. Let's go to your notes, Callie. I'm saying that right.
Shelley.
No, Shelley. Oh, gosh. I'm so sorry.
The last name is Kelly. That's why it's so fun. Shelley Kelly.
It's a great name. So, Shelley, you took a lot of notes and introduced us to your guesses and theories. And
I had a lot of details. Things. I don't know where to start with you.
Begin at the beginning.
I was surprised you didn't mention the title, that still small voice, because the first thing that popped in my head was the morality of it. When people talk about God speaking mm-hmm. to us, it's always described as a still small voice deep within us. And your conscience tells us right from wrong, and that's morality.
Yes. Yeah.
And so how often do we listen to our own conscience? How often do we listen to God? And do we know right from wrong and then make our choices accordingly?
Yeah.
And that goes back to his parents repeatedly saying, well, we don't need the money. We don't need to steal. But, oh, it's a lot of fun. You know, it's the principle of the matter. Well, in the real world, we don't need to sin and misbehave. And we often know it's wrong. But, gosh, it's a lot of fun. And
right.
I guess this ties right back into yours and Deborah's Secrets of Disney. Once you go down that immoral path, it's really easy to continue and justify our wrong behavior.
Yes. And it becomes a habit, and it's basically you mistake the ultimate good, which is love, with temporary goods, material goods. And mm-hmm. But no one is really evil out of pure evil. It's always because you mistake something to be, you know, truly good for you, but it's temporary, and it ultimately goes away. It has no value. I think that's the whole interesting part that Rumpelstiltskin plays, when he's not really after money or possession or power. He is after the thing that is truly important to us. That's what he wants. And so in that respect, he's truly a demonic character, because that's what the devil in biblical stories always tries to do. It tries to divert people from the true from true love, from what is truly good for us, and lure us with temporary material good, with playing on our desire for fun, for amusement, for the having stuff.
The session, Archie asks Henry, "Why is it so important to you to think this fairy tale theory is true?" And Henry can't answer it. He really just can't put it into words yet. But then when they're trapped down in the mines, mm-hmm. and that was important, because that's when Archie first makes the break. He's in the mines, and he becomes Henry's conscience. He's warning him about the danger of being trapped down there. Henry was so caught up in his hunt for proof that he wasn't crazy that he was oblivious to the fact that he was in danger. And not until Archie says, we're kind of trapped and it's kind of dangerous.
mm-hmm.
Does he figure it out? But when they're down there and they're trapped in that elevator, he asks him again, "Why is it so important for you?" And Henry says, "Because this can't be all there is."
Oh.
He's searching for more. And that search to fill that missing part of you, to find a meaning in your life. And for many people, I know that's also kind of the role that religion plays for them. Their relationship with God fills that there must be something more.
Well, and something like a deeper dimension that actually gives your day-to-day life direction. And that in a way is what the fairy tale world is. It is that deeper dimension that makes sense of our current situation and propels it forward and asks for a resolution. It's like your life is bigger than the day-to-day life. We're part of a bigger story. And so we have a role to play, but we can only understand what our role is if we know the genesis of where we come from and where we're going to. And that's what the stories tell us. So yeah, it's pretty profound stuff. At first, I was like, "Oh, this is a great take on fairy tales," and the more I watch this series, the more I'm like, "Wow, they're really hitting upon super important themes here, and literature and religion, and it's amazing." And yet, they never force it on you. It's never like, "Oh, this is a metaphor of this and this, and you should now think this." They leave it up to us to reflect upon
these
themes.
You can take it any way you want it.
Yes.
No, he tells Henry, "I was lost and you found me." "I remembered the kind of person I want to be. I just have to listen more." And again, right back to that still small voice. Mm-hmm. How do we listen to ourselves? How do we listen to our conscience? A lot of parallels there.
Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting in the I know that a couple of the readers are of Jewish origin. And that's one of the major, major elements of Jewish spirituality is this whole Shema Israel. It's like, listen, Israel. So faith starts not with obedience to a law or intellectual understanding or adherence to whatever cult. It starts with listening. That's the first thing that you need to do, listening to that voice. And it's interesting in the definition of what conscience is. in Catholic theology, it's defined literally as that voice of God that whispers in our heart and indicates us what to do and what is right and what is wrong. And I always love that description. Like, conscience is not about legalistic things or rules or whatever, something external. No, it's this voice in your heart. And if you listen to it, it will tell you what your true destiny is and what you should do. And everybody has that voice. That's another, you don't have to be religious to hear that voice. If you just listen, everybody has that antenna to pick up what's right and what's wrong. That's universal. And I think that's awesome. That's because it's something that we have in common, and we can figure out what to do in our world, even if religion is not something that we all share, at least not in the same way. There is still this common sense of this is right and this is wrong, and that is why stories can be universal if they talk about these themes, because we recognize that we have an innate sense of, well, this is evil behavior and this is a good person. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Did you happen to notice also this is the first time Emma and Regina worked together?
Oh,
Regina actually
yes.
asked Emma for
yeah.
her help.
However, yeah, I was like, okay, wow, are we going to see a breakthrough in her character? Is she turning to the good side? And then she messes it up at the ending by becoming super possessive of her son again. And yeah, I don't know. Was that played or was that genuine, you think?
I think it's genuine. My daughter reminded me that in the very first episode, Emma told the guy she was chasing on the date that she knows when people are lying.
Uh-huh.
And then that made me think of the episode where she asked Regina, do you love Henry?
Oh, yes.
She would have known if she was lying. I think if she had lied and said yes and she meant no, I think Emma would have done something differently. But instead, Emma's just intrigued. And I think she's just, the whole story has kind of kept her there and wanting to know. But when Emma expresses her relief that Henry's okay, boy, Regina just boom, puts her back into place. So
you're just a deputy. Go protect the premises or something like that. But it's also because she easily falls back into her evil self. But we see, well, if this was a genuine moment, and I think you're right, Emma would have sensed it otherwise, this might be the beginning of a change in her character, which would make her much more fascinating. Because if she's just a pure evil person standing at the mirror, you know, and then being all evil, it's not as fascinating as someone who actually has good in her. Like the Darth Vader, here's my obligatory Star Wars reference. There is still good in him, and there might be still good in Regina. Who knows?
And it's possible, because we don't know what made Regina go after and get the curse.
Absolutely.
And use it. And again, it's all going to come back to what's the relationship between her and Snow White.
Something happened.
What did
Snow
do? What did she destroy?
Speaking of Snow White, the coffin, the shard of glass. Okay, what's the deal with that? I saw that and I was like, that must be the glass from the glass coffin. That was my first idea. And then when it tumbles down at the end and it ends, I thought that was the coffin. But Deborah, I think you have a different theory, right?
Well, according to ABC, it falls on the coffin. But I didn't think it was the coffin. I thought it was... from the ornamentation on it, it looks like a castle window.
And my daughters immediately picked that up. My 9-year-old, yeah. when they started to walk into the mine, she goes, look, Mom, it's the castle. The steel beam that was curved across the top entrance
really?
Of the mine. My daughter immediately said, Mom, it's the entrance to the castle.
Huh.
And then there was glass in different places. It was just the coffin. It had been a very limited amount of glass. But if it's the castle kind of caved in on itself, or... then there might be a lot more glass because of the extra windows.
I still think it's Snow White's coffin and the glass is from the coffin, although it doesn't make sense that the glass is on the surface.
Right.
So I'm still puzzled by that. I know that Jane Epsonson, who's one of the writers, she's also on Twitter, she confirmed on Twitter that it was the thing that we see at the end is Snow's glass coffin. But again, it doesn't really tell us what the shard is. But I thought, you know, the mines are actually the mines owned by the dwarves. It's where they have imprisoned Rumpelstiltskin at one point. You remember that scene from The Price of Gold where Cinderella walks, gets the tour of the new prison premises that they build inside the mine, and Grumpy is there, and the two Swan brothers. I'll just stick with my theory there. they get that.
We thought
tour.
That too, that it was the dwarf's mine.
And so,
and,
first, and then
Henry
it makes sense.
When Henry picked up the glass, I thought he was picking up a gem that the dwarfs would have mined.
Oh,
but.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm thinking, you know, it makes sense that after Snow White resurrects, you know, and lives happily ever after, that the dwarfs just stored the glass coffin in their mine somewhere. But yeah, I don't know. What's cool is that this final scene of the shard. It kind of shows you that this whole magic world is under our. It's like literally. It's the foundation of our world. It's this secret layer almost under our reality. Which I'm very happy that this show is called The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, because that's what we do. We kind of delve into the story almost like it's like a metaphor, and we try to get to that level, the secret level of all the stories that have inspired the fairy tales and the deeper dimension of our reality in a way, because it gives our life direction. I had a few details that I want to mention, because we're actually already approaching 1 hour. I'm not kidding you.
And I also have feedback. You will want to hear it.
Absolutely. Hold on. First, okay. I'm going to just mention a few things here. And of course, for all our Lost aficionados, I have to mention the Apollo bar. At one point, there is this chocolate bar that Henry picks up, and it's an Apollo bar. And it's the exact same candy bar that they used in Lost. There's this whole underground stash of food, and the Apollo bars have become this kind of token Lost candy bar. And it was a lot of fun to see that it returned here. Then, of course, we've got Pongo, the dog, the puppets. Well, we already mentioned that. I was a bit puzzled in the background when they are at the mine. You see someone holding the dog. And I was like, who is that? Because I was like, is that Ruby?
It's Ruby.
I think it was Ruby. But at one moment, I was like, it doesn't look like Ruby. Could it be Cruella? And then it's like, nah, it's probably Ruby. let's see.
But going back on the Dalmatian thing with Pongo, remember Pongo belonged to the, oh, I forgot his name, but he had the pipe and he wrote the music. But then he met the girl and she had Perdita. So I kind of wonder if Archie will meet someone and she'll have Perdita.
Oh,
wouldn't that be sweet?
Cute. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that's how you'll bring in Cruella, because Cruella was, the wife's name. She was her college friend.
That's right.
Hmm. Interesting. I just found a few more details. And also something I was wondering about. At one point, two people are playing Hangman. I forgot to note who that was.
Oh, that
David
was...
David and Mary Margaret.
Yep.
Oh, so it's like, why do they play Hangman? Is there a fairy tale that features people getting hanged?
Nobody got that great line, "I would never hang you."
Referring to the puppets, perhaps? The marionettes that are hanging on strings?
Maybe. I got more the impression that she was wanted in the fairy tale world, and maybe hanging is the way they would put to death
of
there.
Of course. But I was also thinking perhaps this is a joke on, you know, a marionette is basically a man on a string. And a hangman, that's basically the same. It's I don't know. But I thought, it's just one of these details that sets me up thinking about it for hours. There is a tree in the sheriff's star badge. Did you notice that? When there is a symbol, the symbol of a tree in the middle of that badge.
Did not catch that.
And I was like, is that the tree? Is that the magic tree? Is that Snow White's tree? Is that a tree referring to, is that the, is it the tree from, I don't know. But I was like, okay, if Graham is the huntsman, having a symbol that has a tree makes sense. There's still people who keep believing that he is actually the Big Bad Wolf, not from the Snow White story, but actually from the Three Pigs, the story of the Three Pigs. Who wrote that to me?
Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh,
But that's not the truth, because we thought somebody else was that at some point.
Oh, okay. But there was a joke. I don't know. I think it was, perhaps it was Lisa who said, you know, the only thing it has in common with the story of the three pigs is the ham in Grey Ham. But oh well.
I thought it was funny.
I think that's a stretch.
Yeah, it's a stretch.
Yeah, that's a stretch.
It's too far-fetched. Yeah. They are setting up the tents at one point in a thunderstorm. And I just didn't remember. Was there a thunderstorm in Pinocchio as well? I remember a scene where they're mounting tents.
Pinocchio was, yeah. Remember, there are only two sunny scenes in the entire movie of Pinocchio.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
This going to school, and then the ending. The rest of it is either in darkness or in, you know, the night that he's in the cage with the Stromboli. I believe it was thunder that night, and yeah, I think it was. There's a
very
lot of
cool
rain in that.
I love
that.
That
makes sense, because when they pulled Henry and Archie up to the surface, I noted that the sun was shining very brightly.
More symbolism. Oh, and there is a great line in this discussion between Mr. Hopper and Henry. It's the same question that you refer to, Shelley. Ask yourself, at one point Mr. Hopper says, keep asking yourself why it is so important that all this is real. I think there is something buried there. And I was like, okay, that is great. Knowing what comes, you know, the mines and everything, and then discovering the coffin. There is something buried here. Oh, boy. Let's see. Gosh, you've got, of course, the parents who tell Jiminy, you know, let us do the thinking. That is what parents are for. Again, basically telling him to obey and to not listen to his conscience. This constant power play, literally, which is what marionette players do. They control the action. And in this case, the parents are literally using their child as a marionette. Which is the worst thing you can do as a parent. It's basically, that is what Regina is doing, or tries to do with Henry. She's constantly trying to manipulate and to control Henry. And in the previous episode, there is this warning when he's reading the Hulk comic. She's like, "And these are the rules, and you obey the rules, and there are going to be consequences if you don't." So again, it's the same idea of she is trying to manipulate her child as if he was just an obedient puppet. And then Henry has this very strong sense of independence and freedom. And we know how important freedom is to find your vocation and to be able to love and to care. Freedom is indispensable for true love.
Yeah, I wondered why she leaves a 10-year-old at home alone all day on a Saturday.
I would not
leave my 9 or 10-year-old home alone.
She probably has a very good security system. I don't know.
Must be a really good town. Well, she controls. She's controlling Archie too. She manipulates and threatens him and controls him just like a puppet. And she has the strings. And in fact, didn't she say she threatened to turn him into a tiny, shrunken creature that she could squash or something like that?
Yeah, it could be. How cool!
And I thought, ooh, tiny, shrunken creature, Cricket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very nice. All right. Well, with that, I think we need to go to our segment with feedback. And Deborah, you said that you had some feedback from one of our listeners.
I have feedback from two of our listeners.
Very cool.
I'll start with the shorter one first. And this is David Buckna wrote me this week and sent me not only a little bit of feedback about something you're going to love to hear about, Father, but he sent me a Once Upon a Time quiz that he found online.
Oh.
So, and I took it and I failed it. But I guess I don't know as much about the show as I thought I did. But he put in there a note, in recent issue of Entertainment Weekly, executive producers, Christus and Horowitz said that they had plans to introduce The Little Mermaid, but are still working out how they're going to introduce Ariel. Don't know if they'll get to it this season or next.
I knew it.
Will she be mute? Will she be able to speak?
She could be demuted.
Is that only in the Disney or is that in the original fairy tale?
I think it would be awesome if she would work in the kitchen of the Dave's Fish and Chips store and she would be unable to speak and she would suffer because she's basically preparing her family.
Yeah, I don't know what I think that's the thing is that they haven't decided how's the best way to get her into Storybrooke.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And what she. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I thought you would enjoy that.
Yes, very much so.
All right. And our second piece of feedback comes from Daniel Hyatt, Daniel in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he says, greetings to ye folks of Once Upon a Time. Love the show. Love the podcast. After listening to your last episode, I came up with my own theory of what Henry thought of for code names. I really wasn't thinking in the sense of how he and Emma were related to the fairy tale character or fairy tale land characters paternally. It was more like what's his relation to Emma was like. Please hear me out on this. Either one, Emma equals Alice and Henry equals White Rabbit, the only two characters in both worlds that can leave, or two, Emma equals Wendy and Henry equals Peter Pan, and he finds her and takes her back to his world.
Ooh, Henry's Peter Pan. I like that one.
Yeah. Okay. So Daniel, I guess, did I say David? It is Daniel. You have some really good theories there. These two theories are from Henry's point of view. Both are Disney-based stories. Who knows? We might see some pirates or disappearing cats in the future episodes. My final thought. I also thought I saw a connection of what you spoke of regarding hair length in the previous... Oh, hey, there we go. Mm-hmm. In previous episodes from Snow Falls, where we see Snow White had these long... Oh, this is where I read that feedback. Long, flowing hair, locks of hair, and outgoing, strong, courageous, etc. Yet in Storybrooke, she has a short, boyish cut, and she's timid, meek, and mild, a.k.a. the strength has left her. Coincidence, you decide. Keep up the great work. Happy Advent, and this is in Latin. E cum spiritus tuo to Father Roderick.
And with your spirit. Very cool. All right, that's great feedback. And I want to invite our listeners, if they have theories or things that we might have missed and you want us to mention, or you just have some general feedback on either the TV episode that we're going to talk about or about our podcast, please let us know. The easiest way is to do that via Twitter. We've got a Twitter account, and we've got a great following there, and I love the feedback and the interaction that's going on there. You definitely want to be part of the action there. Just follow us at Once Upon a Time PC. So that's the letter P and C at the end of Once Upon a Time, and PC stands for podcast. And it's just great to see all week long we get these small hints and links to places that we can explore for the podcast, and I love that. But you can also send your feedback straight via email, via old-fashioned email. The email address is onceuponatime@sqpn.com. And SQPN stands for the StarQuest Production Network. So onceuponatime@sqpn.com. And we even have a Facebook page. We don't do much there yet, although I posted a picture. I think I'm going to use it for, like, caption contests. Post wacky pictures of, you know, the episode, and then people can come up with, hopefully, with funny captions, and then we can read that on the show. I don't know. But, look us up on, just type in, search for Secrets of Once Upon a Time on Facebook, and you'll find our page. And if you like it, you'll see our updates in your timeline. So that was about feedback. I've got one more thing here on my list that we need to do, and that is our weekly analysis of the names in the episode. Because names have meanings.
Is it code names?
Is it Cobra our code name?
That's the mission. I mean, us. I need something to call you.
Oh. Why don't you just call me Emma for now?
Okay, well then, I'll see you later, Emma.
So we're introduced to a few names in this episode that might or might not have meaning. And I'm going to talk about the three names of Jiminy's family. His parents, we actually see their names on the mobile theater that they have. It's called Martin and Myrna's Marvelous Marionettes. And Martin is a name from Latin origin, and it means dedicated to Mars. And Mars, of course, was the Roman god of war. So his father is called after the god of war. And then his mom is called Myrna. And Myrna is an Irish Gaelic name. And it means the opposite of war. It means beloved. It means love. So it's very interesting that his parents are like war and love. And I guess that both are elements in our characters. And we need our conscience to make the decision what we do, whether we make war or whether we make love, right? As the Beatles would sing. But and then Jiminy, it's also very interesting, is a variant of the Hebrew name Jame or Jamie. And that name means originally a strong, down-to-earth man. And I thought it was very interesting. Jiminy is a strong person. And of course, he is not very strong at the beginning, but at the end of his story arc in this episode, he has definitely grown in strength. And he has become this down-to-earth, well, he's going even down below earth in this episode. But he's a strong man, and he's independent now, and he knows what is right and what is wrong. And so just a little tidbit about the names, and there might be more names in the episodes coming up or names that I've missed. I didn't look up Pongo. You want me to do that real quick? Do people call their kids Pongo?
It's a dog's name, meaning, you know, one with spots. I don't know.
How do people choose names? I'm curious, Shelley. You've given your son wonderful Arthur, and what was the other name?
Douglas Arthur.
Oh, Douglas Arthur. So how do you come up with names like that?
Well, Arthur is actually a nod to my father. There are two other grandsons in the family, and neither of them carried on his name. Douglas, we just liked. I don't know exactly how we, you know, I remember, do you remember the movie Ever After? There's it's another fairy tale movie.
It is. I love that movie.
The main character is Dougray Scott. Dougray. And I remember Brian and I liked the name Dougray, but no one's going to name their kid Dougray. Mm-hmm. And so we liked Douglas. There's also another movie that used the name Douglas, and we just liked it. And we thought it went well with Kelly. And our daughters are Cameron and Brenna. And so we have that kind of, I'm Italian, and we have this Celtic Irish kind of last name. So we use that to fit with them.
Interesting.
But we went more with family names, that they're all named for somebody in our family.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Well, that's cool. I think that's great to show the connection between, you know, the children of the future and then the family in the past. And We're connected, so.
I don't know that I'd ever use Pongo, though. And I'm not a dog person. I don't have dogs.
Actually,
didn't grow up with dogs. So.
I've quickly Googled it, and the first link goes to the Wikipedia entry about orangutans. Pongo is a genus, is a species of the orangutan. So.
He did find the elevator or the mine shaft at the opening of the air top, so. Maybe Pongo the dog is a genius.
Who knows?
Jiminy Cricket. Did you also catch, though, that Jiminy Cricket is something that people use as an oath, like to avoid saying
yeah.
Jesus Christ?
Oh, mm-hmm. Is that so?
Oh, Jiminy yeah. Crickets. Mm-hmm. It was used
cool.
in The Wizard of Oz, which came out, I think, right before
fantastic.
The Disney version of Pinocchio.
All yep. right.
Didn't they use it in Snow White also? The original.
Yes, actually, one of the dwarfs says Jiminy Cricket. No, one of the dwarfs does say it.
Because if I recall our discussion on The Secrets of Disney, mm-hmm. Jiminy was actually something that Disney added, and the original story had a different creature or something. I don't remember exactly.
Well,
but
Jiminy, actually, the original story of Pinocchio, mm-hmm. and you should be about to release that episode.
That's going to be released this week, so people can go to disney.sqpn.com and download
teaser
that.
From that.
Absolutely.
The original Pinocchio, Jiminy Cricket was just a no-name cricket who appeared in only one of the chapters of the story. And he meets this unfortunate end because Pinocchio smashes him dead with a mallet.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Oh, golly.
yeah, some of these fairy tales are a little bit too gruesome.
But, you know.
That's why we have Disney.
But, you know, Walt decided to take that particular character and make him a little more the narrator and the conscience of the story, because you can't have Jiminy being smashed with a mallet in a Disney movie. I'm sorry, it just wouldn't work. So.
Absolutely.
It's bad enough with Dumbo's mother and bad enough with Bambi's mother.
Exactly. Oh, boy. Will we see Bambi? We'll see. I want to end the episode. It's time to wrap up things with a short preview of the next episode, which is entitled The Shepherd. And I'm going to play the sound of the promo here, just as a teaser.
He's Prince Charming.
Every prince has to start somewhere.
Everyone has a choice. Just make sure it's the right one.
Whether it's slaying dragons.
You do this and you'll be a legend.
Or fighting for their one true love.
You're married.
With someone I didn't choose.
I'm choosing you.
You're this close to wrecking multiple lives. You don't belong together. Stay away.
ABC's Once Upon a Time. All new next Sunday at 8, 7 Central.
Oh, dragons! And Snow White's backstory.
I meant to tell you that too.
Oh,
he or isn't he twin with Thomas?
We'll soon discover. Stay tuned because we're going to talk about that episode in our next show. And thank you for downloading this one. Thank you for being listeners and help us spread the word about this podcast. Tell your fellow Once Upon a Time fans about the existence of this podcast. We don't have a big, you know, promotional budget. And but word of mouth is very important for and it helps people to find the show. So I hope you'll tell your fellow fans to go check out this podcast. And of course, we welcome your feedback. I already mentioned the many ways in which you can contact us, but I want to re-mention our Twitter account, Once Upon a Time PC. PC stands for podcast. And just let us know what your thoughts are. And keep sending us your crazy theories. Of course, one thing I forgot to mention is our website. And I'm very proud of that website. Because it's, I don't know. I love posting wacky theories and bits of news. But it's also a great place where you can post your comments and feedback on both the TV show and on our crazy theories here on the podcast. And the address is very simple. onceuponatime.sqpn.com. So onceuponatime.sqpn.com. Shelley, where can people find you on the internet?
On the internet, our blog is www.soundmindandspirit.com. And we do have a Twitter feed also. Lisa manages that one, and it's, I think, at soundmindspirit.
Very cool. Are you active on Facebook or Google Plus or...
Yes, we do have a Facebook account of Sound Mind and Spirit. And
very cool.
I think Lisa's just started toying with Google Plus. I haven't been on it very much yet.
Okay. Well, for a lot of people, that is still fairy tale land. Unknown territory. Deborah, where can people find you on the web?
Oh, geez. Where can't they? Let's see. I'm also on Facebook, Deborah Shaven, Deborah Jane Shaven. I actually have two Facebook accounts, but I only use one of them. So you can find my other podcast, the one I have another one that we haven't mentioned yet, which is iPilgrim Podcast, a new affiliate for SQPN.
Absolutely.
Of course. And you can find that at iPilgrimPodcast.com. You can leave feedback there for me as well. You can also email me, which two of you had this week, and I was very excited to get your emails at Deborah. Deborah at sqpn.com. And, I'm also on Twitter, and I have a very Disney-like handle on Twitter. It's DISLP38.
Very cool. Well, thank you for listening. I'm Father Roderick on Twitter, but I'm also active on Once Upon a Time PC. See you soon on our next show, and thanks for listening to this one. God bless.
SQPN. Leading the way in Catholic new media.